Thanks, Harry. Awesome to see a lot of people in on this conference. Looking forward to it. Welcome to the Footy IQ Coach Conference hosted by us at 101 Football. Again, thank you for your time. So obviously it's finals football. Everyone's really looking forward to obviously a really good preliminary final week this week and obviously the big one next week. Obviously got a couple of guests tonight, which I'm looking forward to getting into. One in the W part of the footy industry, the women's, and he's doing a really good job. And we'll talk to him about obviously the AFLW season, which is underway at the moment. And then we've got another guest who's heavily involved in the development sector at St Kilda. So looking forward to announce, you've probably seen those. I won't give too much of an introduction straight away. I'm sure they'll be able to introduce themselves shortly, and I'll give you some information about those guys, and then they'll present and we can ask some more questions. The idea around this came sort of a Harry and I were discussing. I'll give Harry a quick intro for those who don't know. Harry's our head of operations, does a fantastic job behind the scenes. Was actually really good footballer in his own mind. I coached him in the academy for many years when he was younger, and formed a fantastic relationship. He's full time with the business now and helps me. Just talking to one of our guests before about how he keeps me in check. So we've got a really good working relationship and come up with many ideas and strategies around a business, and this is one of them. Obviously, you've seen our Footy IQ. Out of COVID came some really cool ideas around how do we, you know, scale our IP, if that's a term to sort of use with what we do around our training and our drills and information, and also the amazing network and directory of coaches we've got on our platform. It'd be silly not to display that. So now we've obviously our crux of our business is our one-on-one sessions with our footballers, but now growing this coach arm to our business, I think, is really important. I speak to a lot of coaches, junior football clubs, schools around Australia, and the need for better coaches has never been higher on the agenda, especially with the the women's game coming in, or a lot more girls playing football, and a lot more participation overall. I think I'm based in southeast Queensland, and never been a better time for football up here, to be honest. And I think I heard a report the other day. I don't know how much fact is behind it, but I heard someone saying that AFL's outgrown rugby league in on the Gold Coast, which is unbelievable. So if anyone thought that the Gold Coast Suns was a poor investment from the AFL, I'd probably think twice if that number is true. So it's incredible the way everything's sort of growing. And again, if we can digitalise this and connect with a lot of you guys out there tonight, I think it's pretty exciting. For the resources we can provide and what we can do to service any needs and demand out there for better coaching. I'm sure you're all, great coaches in your own right, but we're always looking to get better. And you speak to, even AFL coaches these days, and they're always looking to get better. You know, a lot of them fly overseas at the end of the season, do some PD and things like that. So it's no different in the elite environment. So that's the idea around tonight, and we're hoping to launch if we get some really good success, which already looks like we've got a lot of people in tonight. We're going to do these more regularly and showcase our amazing coaches we've got on board and tap into their knowledge. So for those who don't know me, you may know me by now. My name's Andrew Raines, and I'm the founder and director of 101 Football. We started about 5 or 6 years ago, 5 years ago. We're a booking system grew out of an idea that I had to connect local footballers with a coach in their area. I saw the need for coaching, when I was retiring out of AFL, and I saw a lot of kids that I was coaching in the academy here based on the Gold Coast that needed that extra tutelage or teaching in the way they went about their craft. And then the flip side, I saw, a lot of players that I played with coming out of the game that were, I don't know if lost is the right word, but, sort of coming out, transitioning, had 10, 12 years under their belt of incredible experience at the AFL, weren't fortunate enough like I was, got a great job within the AFL industry when I finished, but a lot of those guys didn't. And I thought, while they're transitioning out, why couldn't they, use their services on a platform? And that's how it sort of grew. And we grew from 10 coaches over to, I think we've had nearly 200 coaches pass through the platform, whether they're still on or off is a different story. We've had about 200 coaches pass through the platform. I think we're a bit over 100 that are live at the moment on our system to be able to book. Going back a bit further, played my football at Richmond back in 2004, I think my debut was. I got drafted into 03 from the Gold Coast. I grew up on the Gold Coast. We came here originally, like most people from Queensland or New South Wales, we're Mexicans. We come south of the border from a lot of you guys probably listening tonight are down that way. And yeah, we're all obviously Victorians or South Australians in some form or Tasmanians. But I came from Melbourne. My dad founded or was one of the foundation members at the Brisbane Bears, and we stayed on the Gold Coast ever since. Just such a great lifestyle in here. And I grew up here and played all my football here, and then moved to Melbourne and got drafted to Richmond under the father-son connection there with my father, and played about 6 years there, and then went up north to the Lions. It's such a great club. Supported them a bit when I grew up, watching them in their glory days, and didn't have much success when I was there, but it was just such a really good club, and obviously it's shining through at the moment. I had about 5 years there, and then finished my career at the Suns did the full 360, and had a year at the Suns of playing sort of mentoring coaching role in the reserves, and snagged a couple of senior games there, and then took over their academy at the end of 2015, where I retired after 12 years in the game. Didn't know if I was going to go into coaching. I actually did a Bachelor of Business majoring in property development and finance. So hence why I've got a bit of a business background, and took my two passions from coaching and business, and put them together. Obviously, in my time with the academy, I grew my love for coaching, being involved. And a lot of you guys tonight are probably listening that get so much enjoyment out of that sort of low, when I say lower level, that I should say probably junior level. Just so rewarding. I was in the industry for, as I said, 12 years, and it was cutthroat. It was, you know, sometimes the enjoyment wasn't there, especially in my background. I didn't play a lot of, well, didn't play any finals football, so I wasn't in, you know, successful teams when I played. But what I did know was the need for development and getting better and things like that, and professionalism over the years. And I saw no better sort of a demographic to transfer that onto kids. And it wasn't all about winning and losing. My time in the academy, you know, grew the passion back and the love for the game and coaching. I just fell in love with it. So, you know, transitioned out into a full-time role now. I left the Suns about nearly sort of 2 years ago now. So it was a while ago now. So I've been now in the business full-time, which has now enabled me to dedicate my time to things like this and growing our brand and reaching a huge audience like we currently are. So, which is very exciting. So, again, great to be here tonight. It's a privilege to be able to present and obviously bring some special guests. And again, if this is some success and some feedback that you guys may give us, we'll look to run more of these. And thank you for being you know, signing up to tonight or being on the Footy IQ membership. I hope you get a fair bit of value out of it. So yeah, thanks. So I might just open up to any questions that anyone's got for me personally, or chatting to a few people recently. There's a lot of questions around finals football or anything they're seeing in the modern game. Can be any question, whether it's to me personally or something about the game, you know, far away. I'll just get the chat box out. So I've got one here. Just the most influential player in the comp. Oh, that's a really good question. I would say it's probably looking like I'm a big one for key forwards this year. I think the competition's been really, you know, starved's not the right word, but just the you know, you look at Tex Walker's year and blokes that are popping their head up with just you know, sort of that power forward, Nick Larkey, players like that. I think the power forwards are back, and I think Charlie Curnow's, although he didn't play that well the other night, I think he's been, you know, hugely influential across the competition this year. You could argue obviously Dacos and his impact, but you know, he's obviously going to be a champion player, but he's done it for you know, probably 2 years, where these guys have sort of been, you know, bobbing their heads up for a while now. And the other one too is Bontempelli. Just got huge respect for, and I think he's been probably the most consistent out of anyone in the AFL. The next one, which team's playing style is the most dangerous out of the remaining four teams? That's a really good question. There's elements of dangerous in all the teams that are playing finals. I think the Pies, when they're up and running, and especially the MCG, if it's going to be on grand final, if they can get there, are probably the most dangerous, I think. But probably a team I'll watch them a bit closely, obviously, because of my connection there at Brisbane, is the Lions can just turn a game. And I've seen them do it a fair bit at the Gabba, and that'll help them, obviously, this weekend. When the game's in the balance, they could be, I think I commentated the game recently up there, or special comments, and watched the game pretty closely against, I think it was Adelaide, that challenged them. And then they just went bang, bang, bang in you know, 5-10 minutes and were, you know, comfortable winners in the end. So I think they can be really dangerous too. And bit happening at the moment with GWS too. They look super dangerous. How has Craig McRae's approach changed coaching? When he got the job for, I worked with Fly a fair bit at Richmond. He's a development coach, and Coach Coburg, when I was on the way out at Richmond there, and spent a bit of time with him, and then he came to Brisbane, and I wasn't surprised. I think back in the 80s or 90s, his coaching style may have not had the effect of someone like, we always talk about Lee Matthews, that sort of authoritarian approach around strong sort of leadership. I think Fly's approach has been that sort of caring and loving nature, and you hear a lot about in his press conferences being an individual, being, you know, playing to the individual strengths, and also being an individual as a person. I think he's been huge on that emotional side. And as we know, a lot of coaches obviously would agree with me in this room tonight that it's an emotional generation, these kids, I think, coming through, so that they're a bit more, show their care and love for one another. And I think Craig's brought that massively to Collingwood. How is Jed Walter going with the draft coming up? Can you explain a bit about him and what he's what we can expect next year? So those who don't know Jed Walter, fair bit of press about him at the moment. Jed, I've known since he was 12 on the Gold Coast. He's a Palm Beach junior boy here, Palm Beach Crumb, my junior club. Came through the academy and have become a really close mentor of him over his, you know, past couple of years when he's been in the academy, and even now that he's graduating, and he's actually doing a bit of work for us up here on the Gold Coast. A bit of the stories. He rang me a couple of weeks ago, and he knows he's probably going pick two or pick one in the draft. And he said, "Mate, I reckon I'm going to get drafted." And I said, "Yeah, I reckon you're a fair chance." He goes, "What are your thoughts about, you know?" He's doing a building apprenticeship. He said, "I'm just, you know, it's early mornings, late, you know, sort of just some. I'm sore," all that sort of stuff. He said, "What are your thoughts on a bit of coaching?" And I jumped at the opportunity, even though he probably lacks a bit of experience at coaching. He's actually a really natural. Watching him the other day coach some kids, and the kids just idolise him. It's amazing these days with draft kids. I haven't even played a game, but they're nearly icons, or everyone knows about them early days, especially 13, 14-year-old kids. So he's been awesome coming through, and what you can expect from him, he's a power forward. He watches Charlie Kerner. He models his game off Charlie Kerner. He actually said to me the other night that Charlie wasn't aggressive enough on Stephen May. So that's the type of kid he is. He's actually super aggressive. And I think anyone with that mentality and the talent that goes with it is going to be a special player. The knock on him, not knock on him, but he's probably not a technically or gifted kick like Charlie. Charlie's incredible. But he'll make that up with other stuff, and he can improve. He's improved his kicking a bit over time, and will continue over his journey too. Come on, guys. Any others? Write in the chat box. Are they aware of what to do here, Harry?
Yeah, so for anyone who's just jumped on the meeting, four questions, just type them into the chat box at the bottom of your screen. So while the presenters are talking, if anything springs to mind about what they're talking about, just type it in, and then at the end of the of each presentation, we'll go through the questions. So if anyone's got some questions for Rainsy, type them in now. Otherwise, we will move on to the next one.
Yeah, we've got Paulie goes at one of our coaches. Great to see some of our coaches on here too. So Paul's up on the sunny coast. He said he's late. He just let us know he's a bit late. So he's been at Brisbane Lions Academy training. So. Thanks, Paulie.
You just missed something out, mate. It's the beautiful sunny coast.
Sunny coast, the beautiful sunny coast.
Beautiful sunshine coast.
My Gold Coast, I think, mate, is the most beautiful. But we've got
Sorry, I'm late. But Fruey kept us back.
No, it's all good. Troy, I found a very helpful resource on the platform. Was Luke Powers' defence. Any chance of similar content being put up on a stoppage method? Great point, Troy. Really good point. So there's actually been a huge influx of some presentations that we've got and we'll continue to do. I think the presentations are, we just have to be a bit tiny, a bit careful. And I've played with it. Harry and I have discussed it over the last 6-12 months. We've got huge feedback from presentations like Luke's, but like Scoobs will present to you tonight, it is, there's a few things. It's their IP, which I'm sure the coaches don't mind to share their IP, but also too, it's some of the football club's IP with some of these presentations. So we've just got to be a tiny bit careful what we can present out there. But yeah, definitely keen to get some more out there. How are we looking for time there, Harry? Now we've got some questions come through. I think they're aware of it. So one more question, Harry.
Yep. Yeah, one more is fine.
Maybe come back to them later. I actually got two because I was speaking to one of these guys this morning. How different, if any, from Chris, would coach AFL to AFLW? I know numbers are different, but same systems. We might say that one for Scoobs. That's a really good one. Okay, so he's coming up shortly. And this is from Will, but also I think it might be Scott there too. So a client of mine in Brisbane. Why do teams continue to bomb the ball into forward line and play into the hands of players like Lever, May, Harris, Harris Andrews, and more, etc.? So discuss this morning. Really good question. It's not necessarily their idea to bomb it in, but so to these beautiful, sort of high-flying centre-half backs of the day, I actually used the analogy today, the Djakovic and Carey era. I reckon, I'm a bit old school and grew up in that era, but how good was it from centre-half forward going on a centre-half back? They don't really do that these days. They have their matchups. Like May played on and really blitzed Curnow the other night, but he had so much support. And so what's happened, I think, in the current game is if there's pressure around the football, that will enable teams to bomb it because they're under so much pressure. Now, you watch when it is free-flowing and they do cut up opposition, they shift defence and they go in nice and quickly and get it a bit lower into the hands, you'll see that these, and I've got huge respect for them, but a Harris Andrew or a Darcy Moore, they're not that good one-on-one. And that might be a bit of a subjective or a bit of controversy, but I don't think because to their respect, they're better than probably the previous, centre backs or whatever. It's sort of intercept marking. They read the play really well. But what the question too would say, well, why wouldn't you sort of do that a bit more? I think because of the current day pressure that doesn't enable, to pick through defence as much. If they do get it through, you'll see that it will be like that and better one-on-one matchups. I think it's just the pressure around the football. But again, a lot of other coaches might have a few other sort of comments around that. So it is a subjective topic and also a really interesting topic. So, yeah. Cool. All right, we might get into and keep those sort of coming, and Harry can sort of monitor at the back of our chat. But Tom, getting introduce our first guest for tonight, it's a privilege to have him on board, Matty Scoobus, who's I've known Scoobus for a while. He's a Queensland guy. He played his footy. I was out there today, Scoobs, out at Sherwood, played his footy out in the AFLQ QAFL and worked with him a fair bit at Brisbane at the Lions. And he then relocated to Melbourne. And in that time, he's got a huge passion for coaching, hit me up a couple of years ago to get involved on the platform and provide his services. And then he's gone on to bigger and bigger things down in Melbourne. He's got his opportunity being an assistant coach at Carlton previously in the AFLW, and this year crossing over to the Western Bulldogs in the AFLW right in the middle of their season, or not in the middle, but start of the season. It's very busy, and these guys give up a lot of their time as it is and don't get the pay of probably a male or an AFL coach. So we appreciate his time and like to introduce Matty Scoobus.
Thanks, Randy. Now I'll just give this another go to make sure that we can see the presentation. So can you all see that presentation?
Yep.
Yeah, you got that all sorted, Aaron?
Yep. Yeah, all good to go.
Cool.
So, thanks for jumping online as sort of Rangy's given a good intro, which will save me some time. So I guess, when Rangy asked me to sort of present at this, we're sort of just talking about how we can make something that might be of value. What I have said to Simo as well is some of this is genuinely neutral, some of the stuff I'll talk about from the development pathways through. But I will touch on some of the things that were already mentioned in some of the questions earlier around, I guess, game style and whether there are much differences between the AFL and AFLW in terms of how you might look at it. I'll also show some differences in how the seasons have progressed and what that means in terms of coaching the athletes that we have. But, you know, like Rangy sort of thing, just throw some questions. I guess just to sort of continue on from the intro Rangy gave me, I am at the Bulldogs this year working with Nathan Burke. Last year I was with Carlton and Daniel Harford. But I did spend time in the academies in Brisbane and the Gold Coast. So I guess in terms of coaches who are in those programs, it is a good pathway to learn. When I was at Brisbane Academy, we had Lauren Arnell, who's now the head coach at Port Adelaide. So I spent a bit of time there, but also did a bit of crossover with some of the men at times. I spent time at the Suns, but also locally, I went back and coached at Sherwood, where I played the majority of my football in the Quaffle. Luckily enough, I was the runner for the Lions for a couple of years when Rainsy came to the club as well. So got to know Rainsy pretty well over that time. But I guess sort of what it highlights to me is there are those pathways. If you are sort of that determined as a coach and you want to keep learning and exploring, take the opportunities that presents. So, you know, if you're in those academy programs and you do want to go on, just keep learning, as Rainsy said, keep learning and evolving, because that's what most of us do. Most of us probably have mentors as well that we tap into. And I still speak to Adrian Fletcher quite a bit, who was at Sherwood not too long ago, but coached with the under-18s at the in Queensland and obviously played a lot of AFL. Very good footy brain. We sort of so in terms of that, I think it's important just to do that from a coaching point of view. I guess the last bit about me is I'll just sort of touch on this bit, sort of my coaching philosophy. So I guess most of the coaches that we sort of at this level generally have something like this, which is sort of what I would call our underlying compass. So I was lucky when I was involved in the academy programs at the Lions, coaches would push us to do something like this. Now, I know those that do your higher levels of coaching courses, you will get pushed to do this, but it's just your own little mantra around how do you go about your things as a coach. So I guess for me, I'm big on showing and involving rather than just telling, because I think that's how I learn best. Is if I was involved in things, I would naturally learn a lot better because I can sort of see what it's like from a player's perspective. So in terms of that, one thing that I like to do, and I know there's a few words on this slide, is being prepared. So you know, I guess for me, I'm coaching the back line this year at the Doggies, and what that means for me is doing quite a bit of oppo analysis to see what the opposition's forwards will look like for the next week. So in terms of doing the homework, that's what I like to do. Now, this is not rocket science, as Lee used to say, but it does definitely give you some, I guess, oversight and confidence as a coach too, knowing that what the game plans and what you're coaching to your back line in terms of that week is founded on good education in terms of the basis of how they've played previously. I guess in terms of discipline, probably because I was floating around the Lines when Lee was there, that you sort of pick up on those things, a bit like Rainsy. You're around a club where there's old school coaches, are very much about the discipline and the standards. I don't think that should drop, but sort of to touch on Rainsy's point as well, the way that you might interact with the players might sort of change a little bit. I guess for me, I always like to be organised. I know there's a review at Carlton last season. I don't know how many sort of read into it with the W program, but I think part of the whole theme around that in women's footy was just the ability to be more full-time. So I guess some of the challenges we felt in season 7 was probably being not as organised, not as prepared as a program probably should be. And there are a whole range of factors that led to that, such as around with women's footy, one of the challenges we do have is we're limited on contact hours with the players based on the CBA. So the whole reason the players are pushing a bigger CBA is it actually allows them to become professional, because the AFL limit their contact hours at the club, which means as a coach, we're limited in what contact hours we have for skill development. And for such a young competition growing, that presents huge challenges in terms of how do you get your skill acquisition and how do you get your education and knowledge in. So for me, being organised is a really big thing, because if I'm not, then we waste time, the contact time that we do have at the club. I don't know, Rainsy, and you might be able to speak about that in the men's program, but I don't know if they have the same sort of limitations. I know they probably send you off to have a bit of fun outside, but I know with women's it's quite structured at the moment because they're really conscious of not overloading them But they do restrict how much you can give the female players. I guess for me, always been big on trying to behave the way that I would expect. So, you know, leading by example, something as simple as just wearing a uniform with pride. I guess the other one, having an open mind. So for me, that's just around listening. So I guess as a coach, I try and listen to players. So I'm not the one on the field. I'll see what I see in terms of strategy, patterns, or the execution of particular focus points. But for me, I want their feedback because they're out in the heat of the moment and see and feel what's happening. So I normally always ask them for feedback. And then the last one, I think, is just being personable, especially with the female space. I think the connection that players like to have with their coaches, they really like to be very well understood as people. I'm not saying that doesn't happen with men's footy, but from the experience I've had, and maybe it's a generational thing too, the guys are somewhat a little bit different in that area. So the time you invest in female athletes, if that's what you do coach or want to coach, pays off big time if you invest in them as people first, and then the rest will flow. I guess in terms of moving on from that, when COVID hit, I decided to go and do some study, and I did some study in human factors, which is really around how we present information and learn. And one of the subjects I did was managing organisational performance, or behaviour, sorry. And they had this really great model of the performance triangle. And there were key three elements that I saw out of that were really important to coaching. So one is it's letting people be who they are. So all their individual attributes are important in terms of performance. Now, what I've done from a footy sense is I've thought, what are the individual attributes that make up that person? So as an athlete, I'll look at their weapons. So what are they really good at? How do they communicate? How are they as people in terms of their background, how they organise, if they have leadership skills, whether they're competitive or not? So I sort of package up. So as an individual, what does that look like? On the bottom left-hand corner of the screen, there's something called support and opportunity. So I guess as an environment, how do we facilitate their development, and how do we facilitate them being who they are and bring their weapons? And that's a whole range of things from, you know, the coaches you have, the mental skills that they might have, just the opportunity facilities, all those things are important. But the last thing for me that I generally try and push, and I used to push a lot with the academy players, is effort. And it sounds like a really simple thing, but how I would normally talk to them is, look, if you don't bring your weapons, do you reckon you're going to perform? So what that helps me talk about then is, if a player only has one weapon, if they don't bring it, they limit their potential for performance. Whereas if they can grow via their skill act more weapons, they've got a bigger arsenal to be able to perform because they've got so many things they can draw on. So even if they're down in one weapon on game day, they might be able to pick up another's. So that's just a really helpful model I find in terms of trying to keep things somewhat simplistic in terms of how do we talk to players in terms of their performance on a game day, and or it could even be during the week. So I guess sort of pushing that aside, to some of the things around women's footy in terms of community footy progression, I guess sort of in its infancy, because they haven't had the length or depth of seasons that men's and boys' footy has had over time. You know, from a community footy, there's a lot of sense of social and engagement, which is really important in early years of development of you know, people from the adolescent years through to adults. And it really should be in a learning environment. Down the right, I've got fun. I always like to bring fun. I think that's a bit why Fly has such a good connection and rapport with Collingwood, because he brings an element of fun. Probably like Rangy, spent a bit of time with Fly, and he's actually a really fun guy. So I guess that's an element we should always maintain, because being humans, we sort of like that. And I know definitely in the women's space, they love that as well. In terms of academy footy, you know, I guess there is a level of progression. I'm not saying skill acquisition doesn't occur at community footy, but there is a big focus on that, because we're really, what we're trying to do at academy level is prepare players to take that next step to be drafted. So in terms of that, you generally see a ramp up in education, understanding game plans, preparing for games, and there's generally somewhat more of a professional approach to that, and it is somewhat faster paced and high pressure. I guess the challenge at the moment, especially in Queensland with the academy program, is while they are sort of included in the things like the Coach League or the NAB League, they don't have a full season, whereas in Victoria What I've understood is the Coach League runs for a whole range, like the TAC Cup program. So they have this elite sort of under 18 program that runs for more than, say, 6 or 8 games. And I remember back in the really old days, they tried to do that in Queensland with the tight bands, the Stingrays and all those guys, and it sort of fell over. But I guess it is a bit of a challenge around maintaining that. But what I think is important then, if we look at someone like a Jasper Fletcher, who is going great guns at Brisbane at the moment, the benefit of what we did at Sherwood with him was playing as a 16-year-old against senior men in the quaffle, so that he got used to the speed of the game playing against men. So when he got drafted, it's not foreign to him. He's used to the speed and physicality of playing at the elite level. And then down the bottom, in terms of the AFLW program, in terms of what it looks like and how it's structured, it very much mirrors what the men's AFL program looks like. We just have probably limited hours. So I think that, in terms of what we're seeing, that the W League is more structured than it used to be. The game plan, so if you look at players that played in season 1 to season 8 now, the type of play is different. Back then it was probably more very one-on-one and the best athlete won, or the most physical. Now we're seeing zones, we're seeing the way that we move the ball. The numbers are increasing in terms of efficiency with disposal. Our contest work's improving. So there's a whole range of things that have really changed with the competition in the last 2 or 3 seasons. Definitely more structure. We spend a lot more time in analysing opposition. We spend a lot more time in team meetings. We identify key players. We spend a lot more time on individual development. So the second last dot point on that slide, IDPs, if you've been involved in academy programs, you'll probably know what that term means. But we spend a lot more time in that. And that's really important, because the point Rainsy made about pressure and why balls are being bombed, we see that a lot in at the moment, where teams are throwing so much pressure around the ball, which is important. You know, you sort of make a decision of, am I gonna absorb that or take a risky kick, or do I just send it up the ground, transfer that pressure another 40 metres, and then we just get our numbers up. So in terms of game plan, I used to talk about some of the Brisbane's game plan, and to me it seems to be a front-end game where they'll get it forward almost as quickly as they can and try and lock it in to their game style. So I guess just to touch on some of the trends that we have seen in AFLW, and I'll talk about why this has occurred. What we're seeing so far, the change from season 7 to 8, is an extra 2 goals per team. So an extra 4 goals a game. It may not sound like a lot, but when you've only got 15 minutes of play per quarter, which is what the women's comp does in terms of the time, it's quite a significant difference as a coach. Because when I look at data from season 7 and 8, if I'm trying to compare improvement, it's a bit challenging at the moment, because we're seeing a whole range of factors are different. So inside 50s are up. We can see inside 50 marks are up. Tackles are slightly up, and marks are up as well. So these are the league averages from every team. And so as a coach, when I look at that, it gives me some indicators of areas I might need to focus on. And also, if we look at pure data, for those of us that like to look at pure stats and analytics, we need to sort of be conscious of, like, if I was looking at an inside 50 number, and we see it's gone up, we might sit and go, well, it's not really good, and it probably isn't. But what I try to then do is look at, well, what's the efficiency of those inside 50s, and also what's the conversion rate of inside 50 marks to inside 50s? Because that generally gives me an indication of, are they getting marks, or are they scoring? So if the scoring's high and if their inside 50 marks are low, it's probably from a ground ball situation, which means that we need to improve in ground balls. So I generally use a bit of data. We have all this sort of set up in the coaches' boxes, which is not too dissimilar to what the men do. But I spend a bit of time just looking at this week to week, just to see what our progression is. As a coach, and it might be one for another time in terms of, I know there's a question around sort of how do you work through stoppages. I'm even happy to look at presenting on something a bit more detailed around some of the data I use during the week in terms of what it means for me and how we might adapt our program. But I guess the whole snapshot for me is, as a coach, we need to look at how we get our athletes a bit better focused, because what we're seeing in the W League is a big change in terms of everything's increasing, from scoring to the physicality to the execution and things like that. So moving sort of from what that looks like in terms of how we plan and manage training. So the structure we have at the Bulldogs, and this is similar to Carlton, and most clubs have moved towards a bit of more day training. So traditionally, in women's footy, we've had more night training because the girls have had day jobs. That's slowly changing. And so what we're seeing is more opportunity to train during the day. Now, this, looking at this as it is, probably still seems a bit like community footy a little bit in terms of the time or the contact days. But what we can't see on here is that when the players will come in on a Monday, they'll spend about 5 or 6 hours at the club. So in pre-season, this is kind of what our structure looked like. And Carlton last season was very similar, where the girls will rock up, but maybe it could be, I'll use Monday as a night session. So they might turn up at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and do a whole range of prep. There might be physio, they might be doing some specific IDP or strength training. We have a main part of our skills training session, and then they'll do strength and conditioning after. So they'll spend a real good chunk of time at the club. So I think the challenge a little bit with coaching in women's footy and AFLW is just the time in terms of when they're at the club for a long time. Whereas maybe in the men's program, I think they might scatter some things more on different days during the week. So they might, for your main skill session, you might be there for 4 hours and you might do your weights on the next day. With the women, they do it together. Although Brisbane are slightly different, they will use off days, but that's sort of an agreement they have with the players. So I guess just sort of moving on, our Wednesday session is very similar to our Monday in terms of our weekly schedule. And then we'll have a really big session on a Saturday in a pre-season. And the idea behind that is it's kind of almost conditioning them for a game. So we'll spend similar amount of time in terms of this the type of training that we do. One thing that's a big component with W footy is just the education piece. So because some of them probably haven't, and this is changing, that the girls were getting drafted now are a lot more in tune with footy because they've played from their junior years. But if we go back, sort of players that are probably in their 30s now probably haven't had that. So there's still quite a big education piece. So we would use our Saturday training as an education piece as well. What does that look like in season? So this is where we are at the moment. So our Monday nights are generally a review night where we do very basic skills. It's just to get the body moving. It's more of a recovery and rehab night. We will do individual player reviews as well as an overall team review. So the idea behind that and how Berkey likes to run it at the Bulldogs is we'll do a team review on the Monday. Then the line coaches like myself, we will do individual line reviews with our particular line on a Tuesday, just so that we can complement what Berkey said as a team. And then if there's a specific focus points that drop out of the team review, we'll roll that on the Tuesday. The Tuesday session at the moment, because if we've played on a Sunday, we'll not be a huge session. So we sort of juggle the Tuesday and Thursday session as to which one's going to be the biggest. The SNC people generally dictate that to us. So I guess the challenge, another thing for those that sort of move up those ranks, what you'll notice in coaching is we sort of have a lot less involvement in the SNC and some of the drills that we do because there are certain key criteria that are met in terms of the running capacity of the players. So it's a bit of a challenge. And I remember when I was at the Sun sitting in the box and Blighty said something to me about how hard he would find coaching because of the rotations and how they would change, whereas back in his day, I guess the coach had the final say on all of that. So that's just the evolution of how footy changes from, you know, the head coach being in control of a whole range of things to sort of what we get influence in now. So I sort of mentioned sort of Tuesday, Thursday can be a bit of a swap. What we generally do on a Thursday, so we actually play on the Gold Coast this weekend on Sunday. I'll give us a plug, so if anyone's around, 5 p.m, should head down to Heritage Bank Arena and you'll see us take on the Suns. So what we'll do is we'll have a training session tomorrow night. We'll do full oppo analysis on what the Suns look like from their games the last couple of weeks. We'll have our full training in terms of the game modes that we want to adopt this week. The girls will do a little bit of strength conditioning stuff and then that'll be it. And then on Sunday we play, so we'll fly up on Saturday, do a bit of a captain's run. So just get the legs ticking over at Heritage Bank Arena on Saturday arvo, check out the ground, have a little bit of a meeting, and then that's pretty much it. So in terms of in season, we might have 4 or 5 touch points during that week with the players. So I think that's not too dissimilar to how the men's programs are generally set up. I'll just touch on here why skill development is important. And look, to those of you that know about this, I'm not trying to tell you to suck eggs, but it's just something that I sort of go back to in terms of IDP. Really for me, when we're in pre-season looking at the skill act, for me, increasing the weapons for players and especially women gives them a lot more confidence. So what we do find sometimes in women's footy is they're quite literal. So if you tell them at one stage you're getting too high up the ground in a certain situation, sometimes they hold on to that, and it can confuse them if they're not, if they don't have high footy IQ. So one thing that we try and do is give them a lot more weapons and arsenal so that they have more things at their disposal, so they don't keep hanging on to one thing that seems to be a threat under pressure. If there's any questions on that, happy to answer those as we go through a bit later on. One thing I also try and get the players to do, which the ones that aren't natural footballers don't do this yet, is prepare the ball in their hands. So what I mean by that is as soon as they catch it, if you're looking at handball, you're already rotating the ball so you can fire out a really good handball, or rotating the ball so you can execute a good drop punt or kick it around your body. That doesn't come natural to a lot of the women players. So that's one thing I keep trying to stress at training is as soon as you get the ball, think about, so your eyes are darting, looking at what you're doing, and then your hands should be following, preparing that ball so that you can execute it. And that gives them confidence to execute under pressure rather than, oh, hang on, the ball's come now, I need to think about kicking it. And by the time you do that, you're tackled. So there's a number of things there. And then efficiency is just that repeated consistency. So smarter, quicker decision-making, because the game's getting faster, quicker, longer, harder, trying to adapt and ensure that those skills best prepare them to execute as W gets better and better is something that we just keep trying to drive. This is an example of an individual development plan. This is one that we used to use at the Lions Academy. So apologies if there's anyone there, but I'm not trying to tell you how to suck eggs. But again, most clubs use something like this. So I like the term weapon and growth. It just seems to roll pretty well. So what we used to try and do and what we do at the Bulldogs, it's very similar here, is look at a couple of things that players are good at, a couple that they can improve upon, and then some specific skill drills that they can do. When Lauren Arnell, just before she retired, we had a good chat to her, and she was telling me that what she did in her last season was literally just do something like this. So for training for 10 minutes, she would do about 10 or 20 touches of the footy and working different things. And especially if I touch on ground balls, the reason why Loz would do that in terms of her IDP was 65% of the balls on the ground in women's footy. So as much as we execute in the air, the reality is if we can't win a ground ball or win a contested ground ball, we limit ourselves in terms of our ability to influence that game. So in women's footy, this may change over time as the comp gets better and the skills get better, but where it has been, it's very much a contested footy game. So I guess just to sort of wrap up in terms of tying that together, so what we've seen in the trends and what we need to sort of think about with coaching, I've probably overcooked this a little bit, but in terms of craft and attributes of an athlete in especially women's footy, what we're seeing is we're going to need to be better in contested marking craft because players are getting stronger. The opportunities for wrestling become greater, and or if we've got athletes who are really good on lead, if we use a Taylor Harris who can do body work and go, how do we defend that? So we need to sort of get better with our craft in terms of our marking, and if we're a defender, which, you know, how can we be smarter about our body position? Goal kicking efficiency is getting better, although Collingwood didn't help themselves on the weekend. Reading good and dirty ball, and I talk about that because the dirty ball is just the ones that are bombed in, thrown on the boot. That's that ball under pressure, reacting quickly. One thing I've been doing with our backs, and this is touching on the points raised earlier about intercept marking, is basically the attitude I've got with our defenders is I want you to get in the best position to win back the drop of the ball. I think sometimes previously as defenders, naturally, even years ago, we would maybe assume back shoulder, which means straight away we limit our impact in terms of marking ability. And if I think about the really good defenders at Brisbane with Lepich, Mal Michael, those guys, Mal was such good at spoiling, but Lepper was such a good intercept marker because it was his body positioning and his ability to react first and beat his opponent to the ball. So that's a big thing that we push in women's footy. And I think it's a big thing in the AFL, the shift in the last 5 to 10 years around that ability to win a set mark. It can catch you out because if they don't have that defensive craft and get their timing right, you can bleed goals. But it is a change I've noticed in how footy has transitioned or changed in the last 5 or 10 years. The stuff in the middle I've got there applies to all lines. That's just your contested ball craft. So I won't go into that in too much detail. Down the bottom, I guess defensive craft in terms of attributes that are really highlighting this season because of the change. A big one for me is ability to rebound 50. So if we can't exit out of D50, that it becomes problematic, because what we're seeing, especially this season, is more zones. What we haven't seen a lot of in women's footy is zone defence, but we've had a bit of a thing, and because most teams have had so much time in off-season now, we're seeing probably at least half the comp or more adopt a zone. So if we can't rebound 50 and then connect through that next line in the middle with a zone, it becomes really difficult footy to transition that into your forward line. I guess just some other things here that are not so much skill specific, but from an athlete point of view, speed, endurance, strength, that's pretty straightforward. I guess the other one is just a mental thing here. What we do find a bit more with women athletes too is their openness around any sort of potential things that might be affecting them outside of footy. So I guess as a coach, you really need to sort of be across your playing group to sort of identify that. I guess as guys, traditionally, we've never been really good about talking about it, and you sort of put on a brave face. But what you will find with the women is they're more honest and they'll put their hand up. So I don't know how much, I don't know what the numbers are, but it generally tends to be a perceived increase in what you hear in the media about players taking breaks from games or things like that due to mental health. And it's probably a good thing because they're just really aware of it. I guess just some key takeaways, probably running over time here a little bit. I guess for me, it's around, getting an IDP. Now, I've spoken about a player IDP, and I was having a chat to another coach the other day about a coaching IDP. So I guess depending on what your trajectory is and where you want to head, that's probably not a bad thing either. I've got just in there around competitions getting better, so we need to adapt. So for me, it's around trying to analyse what are the emerging trends and can we stay on top of that as the game evolves. Similarly, you know, playing or coaching, have a role model. As I said, I speak to Adrian Fletcher quite a bit still just to speak about ideas. Obviously, I speak to Berkey a hell of a lot, and he's got really good experience in the game. So that really helps in terms of game style and what we need to do as line coaches. And I've got down the bottom, one thing I do think is important, though, is the basics in footy don't really diminish. So your ability in terms of your skills and winning contested footy, your ability to execute under pressure, your ability to withstand pressure, that's been around ever since footy's been around. So I think there are some basics that we can't get away from, but at the same time, my message in that is also don't overcook it. So, you know, if you're giving messages to players that are 3, 4, 5 at a break, that's really hard, because we did get feedback last year at Carlton. I remember one player said to me, "Scoobs, I have no idea what you're saying." Now, Skeb's 18, probably got a bit of ADHD, but what you need to sort of try and manage a bit is that expectation that we know what we want them to do, but sometimes they're in the heat of the moment and they just can't cope with more than a couple of messages. So that's pretty much it in terms of what I've got here. So I guess we'll just sort of throw back and go from there.
Thanks, Scoobs. All right, I'll just share my screen again, Rainsy, and then jump into the questions.
Yep. Awesome. No, thanks, Scoobs. That was really good, mate. A really, really good insight to not only, as you said, I think it's quite gender neutral in terms of some of those things you presented, but also to a bit more insight in the AFLW stuff. I'll learn a fair bit out of that because I've been a bit sheltered in terms of, my work with predominantly males. So it's good to get that. And I know a lot of our coaches do coach women or girls. So, amazing. So, mate, really appreciate that. We'll open up to a few questions. I've got a few here earlier. Just grab one. It was a good point. I'm an under 14 girls coach, James said. So he's finding numbers of girls dropping out this age is really high. Any tips on keeping girls interested and in game through and beyond this age group? So again, you're dealing with women who want to obviously be there. I suppose you're messaging around, the fun aspect and things like that, especially with girls being a sort of a younger age. Any insights on that, mate?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. I think even when they're 16, 17, 18, there can always be that risk. I guess the funny thing is when I've done one-on-one, I've actually had more girls than boys want to get on board. I definitely think ultimately creating an environment where they feel safe and that they can be themselves. I think part of the reason why some of the girls have dropped out of footy is because not only have they not had an opportunity, and I think that's changed, but I think the other thing is I haven't felt like it's an environment potentially that they want to continue in. So I think as much as it could be around, you know, what you're doing in terms of specific footy stuff, for me, there's a huge emphasis on the environment we create and really trying to make that a fun place that they just want to come back to. It's almost like Auskick, you know. Yeah. For me, the thing with Auskick was we would play games like Red, not so much Red Rover, but Simon Says and things like that, because the kids had fun. And then by association, they get a backpack and a football and they want to keep going to Auskick. So in a simplistic way, for me, it's around trying to emphasise that side of it.
Yeah, cool. Spot on, couldn't agree more. So we've got one here. Do you think the ability skill gap is too great in AFL? Sorry, in the AFLW, and we'd be better served with fewer teams and narrower skill gap?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting question. I guess this one's sort of always been debated. My view from being involved in the program is let's rip it off. Let's go to full 17 round comp now, because that's when we'll get the basis to get better. The challenge at the moment is every time it evolves, it just sets things back a little bit. So I guess my answer is I don't think we need to go to fewer teams, but what I think we need to do is the AFL needs to be smart about how they support that. I think part of the issue has been they probably didn't have a really long-term vision when they started the comp to see how and where they wanted to progress and at what rate that they progressed the comp. But I know from being involved in the program, we just wanted to get better. And I think at the moment, the more we keep evolving it, so if they talk about extending the season, next season might be 12 games and by 2026 they get to 17. I just think it's not until you hit that full-time line in the sand that you're actually going to see really good development, because you still don't know what the comp's going to look like in 2 or 3 years.
It's a good point. It's a bit like the chicken and the egg, and it's sort of like, do you just, as you said, rip it off and just get all the teams going, and then, you know, one day it'll obviously catch up. But it's a good point, though, too. I do see the flip side. Initially, my initial thoughts would have been, yeah, obviously went too hard too early, but Jesus, but it's been an incredible, you know, following and participation and the business model from the AFL. So it's been obviously a plus from there. Caelan's got, when analysing / coaching a match, whether male or female, what's the first few stats / areas you look to identify and dissect?
Look, that's a really good question. For me, that's dependent on what your coaching points are. So I know in the back line, I generally have 3 dot points, and one, the main one for me is around pressure, because if we can't defend, we don't want to all play attack, because we need to defend our back half. The next one for me is in our support, so that's our structures, and then we'll have run and create. So I generally have 3. Now, what I then do is tie stats into that. So I think with us, I know Berkey will have his key oversight, which is around our running and spread and our pressure. For me personally, I try and have some sort of stat or KPI. So for example, intercept marks are big for me, because it talks about a structure behind the ball. So if we want to play an aggressive defensive pattern, intercept marks, we're probably going to guard space more than our opponent. If that's down and the opposition are taking high intercept marks, I know that our pressure isn't there. So I will try and tailor what the stats applicable to the key focus points I have. So I can't really give you a really good one that you need to do, but my advice would be tailor it back to what your game style is, and you'll be able to find something that is a good indicator that tells you whether it's working or not.
Yeah, or that individual player for sure. Yeah. And then we'll probably, because we're getting on with time, but I didn't want to pull you short too, mate. I reckon it's just been amazing. And I agree. I think the crowd or the group in here tonight would agree to keep you going. Obviously, we've got a next guest coming up, so we'll get on to that. But last one from Troy. I've got a bit of opinion on this, but I'll let over to you first, Scoobs, and then I'll go. So Queensland girls' school level appears to be stronger than the boys at state carnivals. Do you have an insight into why this may be the case over the Queensland girls?
I mean, it could be selfish and say because we've been involved in the program, but that's a bit of a smart-ass comment. Yeah. Look, I don't know, but in general, what I do know is the girls generally mature quicker than boys at in their adolescent age, so they're actually quite more physical. But if you're trying to compare Queensland to other states, that's a question I don't really know how to answer. Yeah. I've only sort of been involved in the academies in Queensland. I haven't seen it down here, but that is probably one point that I see is they have a NAB league here, but the academies are really different in Victoria, whereas I think in Queensland, the academies are really well run. And I know, Ranger, you spent quite a bit of time at Gold Coast. It's a different setup with academies here.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. It's probably a few things for me. I think The girls are treated, like, for those who don't know, the girls are like a Division One state in Queensland. So our boys would be in Queensland, when I say us, Queensland, is they would be Division Two, you know, Victoria, WA, SA. But the girls up here are rated really highly. And that's my belief, is it due to the girls started, when the games were started, I think there was a lot of girls playing it. It's obviously a really good sport up here. It just got a bit of momentum. And I think Scoobs is right. We had our academy sort of set up for the boys. And then the girls were, you know, when it was in its infancy, they were straight into it, where maybe it was a bit of a lag time to get that sort of set up down south. I'm not too sure, but there's probably no right answer. There's probably a multitude of reasons. So, no, good question, though. Really good, mate. We'll probably wrap you up there, mate. That was, fantastic presentation. I'm sure everyone got a lot out of it. And obviously, I appreciate your time you've given up tonight to be in here and to pass on your knowledge. I know that you're a student of the game, and I'm sure there's a lot of students in the game now that it's incredible what coaching and mentoring can do. You sort of pass it on through different people and sort of, you know, pay it forward or pay it back type of thing. So, I appreciate your time tonight, mate.
Cheers with you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, mate.
Renzi, I might just jump in quickly. Guys, for those of you asking about the IDP, the individual development plan, we actually have a template on the Footy IQ membership. I've just put the link in the chat. So if you're a member, you can have a look at that template that we have. It's a practical one that you can use with your athletes straight away. So that link is in the chat for you. All right. Damien should be here.
There he is.
G'day, guys. How you going? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, got you, DC. How are you, mate?
How are you, mate? Good, good. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'll let you give yourself a bit of an introduction shortly. This is obviously not a... We've got Damien in sort of last minute. And, mate, appreciate your time tonight, and obviously waiting there for a bit too. Just these things always obviously go a bit longer than originally planned, but I think that's been awesome tonight to hear from Maddie, and then obviously some of the questions have been fired away, which is great. So without further ado, I'll introduce Damien Carroll to the coach conference tonight. Damien's background is super diverse. He'll probably explain a bit more about himself, but he spent time obviously in the AFL system. He's been at Hawthorn, Collingwood, and now St Kilda, and a lot in the development stuff. And those that have had the privilege to work with him, I know a few people that have worked with him. He's again, we talk about students of the game, and or obviously teachers of the game. Damien definitely fits that category and doing some amazing things. So I'll hand it over to you, mate, to give yourself a bit of an introduction, maybe your background and how you got involved in footy, and then we can sort of go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Ramsey. Probably the hardest question, isn't it, talking about yourself? But I played a lot of reserves footy years with the Saints and Melbourne Under-19s. Never played AFL. Dad played a couple of seasons at Fitzroy. Footy was obviously a big part of us growing up. Three brothers who played as well. But yeah, I played for 13 years in the VFL. So I just wanted to play as high as I could for as long as I could, really, and didn't really think too much about coaching until the second last year, when pretty much Jared Fitzgerald took over at Springvale, and I sort of was an assistant coach in that second last year. And I was head of sport at a school, and obviously sort of coaching a lot of teams at school. But then I went off after playing VFL and coached my own team for 4 years, which was great experience. But being a player coach, I realised the difficulties in different situations of that. And then I was very lucky to pick up a NAB League job with Gippsland Power. So I had 2 years down there, and great experiences, wonderful area to coach. Different challenges, but stepped away from the teaching side to sort of go into that area and move down away from Melbourne. And look, I think for me that was probably the biggest move in my coaching. Then we had two pretty successful years, and off the back of some really great players as well. So I got the opportunity to coach Box Hill, aligned with Hawthorn, and move into development, and then yeah, we had so much success through Hawthorn, so there was always people exiting out of the club, and that's where I was able to get some opportunities as midfield coach, forward coach, head of academy, head of coaching, and then to Collingwood and now the Saints, sort of in that head of development space, which I really love. So yeah, there's a bit of a snapshot, but obviously not playing AFL, and I know you know, some people sort of move through the stages of AFL and then back into the AFL system through what they've done on field. But, you know, I think it's probably been a bit harder since COVID, but I think that'll bounce back. So for people who don't play AFL and have aspirations, you know, definitely pursue that journey if it's something that you're interested in.
Absolutely, mate. And just in terms of your sort of current role, explain a bit more about that at St Kilda for us.
Yeah, so head of development, it's got the end learning on the end of it, but that probably started more when I was appointed last year. So it's primarily the role of development is for the first to 4 year players, but we like to think of development for the whole list, so the full list of 44 players. I know there's been a fair bit of talk tonight since I joined, which wasn't at the start of the conversation around IDPs, and yeah, that's probably my main space in terms of what the players' individual development plan looks like, and particularly for our younger players, and the sort of levels that we go to make sure they're executing that. But yeah, we have, you know, we immerse the younger players in every meeting that's possible, but we also have sort of an extra academy session each week, which we might focus on a different topic around on or off field areas, and we do quite a bit of extra craft sessions and just education sessions on the floor as well, just to make sure that the players are getting what they need for when they're ready to step up, I suppose. Rainsy,
spot on, mate. And then going into a bit more sort of depth around probably a two-pronged question, but for a younger player, so it's a first sort of second year player, what would their, I'll get asked this question all the time, it's different between pre-season and in-season. Maybe use in-season, for example. What's their sort of in-season week look like? And then across the board, what's some of sort of the most important sort of areas to focus on in the first year or two?
Yeah, so as I said, we want them to do, be involved in as much as they can. Someone like a Mateus Philippou comes from a really strong basketball and football background load wise, so he's able to deal with a lot of the training and get through that part, and his weights is a little bit advanced on some of the other players, so it's very individual in terms of the physical and football side, but they're involved in all the meetings from the whole list. And then as I said before, we like to do I'd probably call them sort of interleaving sessions, where we leave different topics and then come back to them to sort of test their knowledge, or we present different areas to them, or we look at off-field areas that maybe that they sort of haven't really established yet in terms of their identity and their football identity, and then making sure it's a real holistic approach, so they understand that, you know, they're not just defined by their footy, and we try to make sure there's that balance, because, you know, they are there for a long period of the day, 5-6 days a week, and we've got to make sure that, you know, they've got other things that balance out that as well. So a typical week, though, in season, they'll get their day off, and the rest of the time, I think they're probably the first to 4 years are probably putting, you know, 15 to 20% more in terms of just extras and time, and even learning about recovery and nutrition, diet and sleep and those things as well. In terms of what probably for the coaches on the call, the two over my 13, 14 areas in the AFL, I think the way the kids come in and then defend is often quite different to what they've sort of been accustomed to, and there is a lot of still one-on-one defense, but you know, whether they've come from a coach league where there might have been different rules around zoning and you know, players having to stay inside 50, there's a lot of differences in terms of even the specifics around different coaches want to coach defence. So from working with Alistair Clarkson and Ross Lyon, for instance, where the team defence is quite strong, it can take them a while to understand that. So we put a lot of time into that area. And the other one, just for the coaches again, is not ignoring the combat body contested side of things. Even if the player hasn't developed their body yet, I think that's another area that they come in quite inconsistent in. So just as a little bit of a guide, if you can sort of bring some of those principles and coach the players that you're working with at youth, thinking about them moving through to being 25, 30 year olds even, and picturing what skills they might need, I think that's really valuable for the player, and understanding that sometimes you've got to play one-on-one, sometimes you actually got to, you know, defend two or zone off yours to impact another one as well. So just a couple of things that they might like to think about in the way they structure their training sessions.
Yeah, it's a really good one, mate. Really, really important factor. That defence one's really good. I know coaching, myself, just trying to, you know, just drip feed parts of team defence in, whether it's that sort of come forward to defend philosophy, yeah, and basic little things like that. I think that's terrific and great knowledge for our coaches to be able, you know, take that on board. Mate, how do you go about sort of developing, you know, that individual player, you know, working on, I think you touched on before, like, you know, you might have a coach lead player or a player that's come through the National Academy and just dominated, and, you know, but when they come to the AFL system, there's, you know, that many other talented players, you know, sort of on their level, but they, you know, they start off their journey on the AFL list of sort of the old cliche, you're 44th on the list, even though you get drafted. So how do you really focus on developing that individual player, whether it's first, second, third, fourth year player, or even a younger player, you know, trying to, you know, work on those strengths and growth areas?
Yeah, I think it is a massive, obviously, understanding the individual, and, you know, as every level is. I was going to try and quickly click on your IDP actually and have a look at it, and I did see Matt's as well, but we obviously have IDPs, and I thought it was a good question to sort of talk about tonight, Rainsy, in terms of, I think the coaches out there, they've got to one understand is why they've got an IDP and why they're doing it. So, you know, there is an element of, and I've been involved in this and had this thinking, that sometimes you've got an IDP and you're doing it because the club says everyone should have an IDP, and, you know, then it's sort of a requirement. It's like if you're working in a business or a school and you have to have an IDP. But I think for me, the IDP is, it has to be, if I went up to a player and they couldn't relay back to me what their IDP was, even without having the document there, then I strongly believe that it's not really worth it. They should be able to be able to have a discussion with you and just understand, look, this is what my IDP is. This is what I'm really clear on working with and who I'm working on this particular thing with. So ours, that looks like it's yours there, is it?
Yeah, so I've just put it
in front of me.
Mine's a fair bit of depth.
Thank you.
I'll put this together, sort of leaving the Suns. It's sort of my own mixed with my own sort of experience. Mine probably crosses over probably only important really the first two pages, and then the second two pages more, yep, of like where welfare would work in, like their mental side. So I remember a lot of players at the Suns had sort of a welfare idea, or the welfare team would look after, when I say, well, their personal excellence, whatever they call it. But then probably the two blue pages are Harry, just broken down into three aspects of the game really. So their offense, defense, and contest. But I know it's great looking at different, there's so many different IDPs. You know, Scoobs is one I really like because it was straight to the point. It was one or two areas, you know, weapons, growth, which was areas, you know, great areas that they're doing well, and then areas to work on. So, that's what we're going through there.
Yeah. And I think it has to fit yourself and your personality as a coach as well. And obviously, you know, if you've got a player who's coming to a one-on-one session, for instance, and they are, you know, footy and this is what they want to do, you know, and they're not doing that at their club, maybe a more detailed one is what they want, because at the end of the day, it's what they want as well. But I think even looking at, you know, body craft and mind, which a few groups use, we don't use those sort of words, but We do have the personal element that you've sort of got there around whether that's leadership, whether that's catching up for a coffee with a senior player once a week or whatever it is, uni, making sure you get those requirements in. But I think it is good as even a coach for me to understand what they're working on around their body and what they're working around on their mind, as well as the conditioning people understanding what they're working on from their skills, because I know at our level there's so many good people, but I've seen it time and time again where you can be working in silos and not understanding what you're all working on with the same athlete. So, but again, I just encourage coaches. They're great. IDPs are great, but they're often the start of pre-season, you get it sorted, and then, you know, like, what priority does it become for different coaches? You know, does it float out the door and they become more into a strategy as the season goes on? And that's fine. I suppose my role is looking more at the longer term development of our players at the club, and there's other coaches who are looking at the short term. So I need to be bringing our coaches back to what, are they getting enough reps in this particular area? This is what they want to work on. And then, you know, we could add a whole nother half an hour on, you know, the strength versus, I'll call them growth areas rather than RFIs or weaknesses, but your strength versus growth, because there are some of their growth areas that they're just, if they don't get those right, they're not going to play AFL. So they have to get that right. But again, I would say that most of the focus should be on your strength. And, you know, I love that Lionel Messi story around, you know, where he was nearly going to go home from one of the academies. He could only kick left foot, and they wanted him to kick, you know, right foot. And instead of, you know, he's a 10 to 1, I think, left to right, where most of the soccer players are sort of 4 to 1. But he had this coach who just said, no, look, let him kick it this way. So your growth areas can often be your greatest advantage as well. So I think that is, you know, something that I sort of keep coming back to, is trying to make sure that somebody has something as an 8, 9 out of 10. And if it is 8 out of 10, get it to 9 as well.
Excellent, mate. I think it's a bit like the trademarks of, you walk into some footy clubs and so many words on walls and things like that. Sometimes it's a bit like IDPs are sort of similar. It can get a bit sort of, you know, a lot of things on there, but if they simplify it, or actually, you know, as you said, you're accountable for that player, and they're accountable for their plan. I think it's a great idea moving forward. You know, for their whole development. You know, especially in the AFL, but even, you know, junior coaches out there tonight, something you might just want to think about developing. I know a lot of us, a lot of volunteers out there, but it's, you know, obviously important to that individual. Mate, so on that sort of topic of junior football, you've obviously coached, at all different levels throughout your coaching career. What would your advice to be to, you know, sort of that more community-based junior sort of teams and you know, around development of players at that level? You know, we just spoke about then. Is it, you know, little IDP, or is it little sort of goals for each player? Or is it, you know, there are obviously a lot of people time poor, but what's some advice around that sort of, sort of realm?
Yeah, no, I think it looks like my screen's frozen of me. I don't know if that's for
everyone else, but pull it back up. What happened to me?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, if it's okay, you can.
No, I can. Yeah, you're moving, mate.
Excellent. Yeah. More moving, that's all right. Yeah. So I think it's really important to understand each of your players. And I see this time and time again where you look at, you know, a lot of local teams and the coach is very passionate, you know, there's 5 or 6 players who are, you know, footy is probably everything, but I think understanding every reason why they're there and you know, is John there for just to have fun? Is Paul want to be an AFL player? And I think that's, you know, we sort of take it for granted, but then that can shape how you communicate, how you maybe don't get frustrated with some of the things that perhaps could happen as well. So I think that's the first and foremost. I do like coaching through small-sided games and decision-making, because obviously even if you've got the fundamentals, if you're making a bad decision, it's not going to help you. But if you get the decision right and you haven't got the fundamentals, well, you're still half a chance to get out of it. So putting them in those situations. But I'd encourage the coaches not to, I suppose some of the stuff I've read through Doug Lemov, who's some of the – the audience may have heard of, has sort of reminded me that, you know, we wouldn't just put the maths class on and say, here it is, just go for it, you know, and it's up to yourself and develop it. And you know, this is a strength of your program, Rainsy, as well, is that there is still a time to be explicit, but there's also a time to really give that feedback to players, and a good maths teacher will walk around and understand, you know, this one needs some help, and they'll guide them one-on-one on this particular area. And so don't just probably get lazy and think the game, you know how you people say the game will teach you, and it does to an extent, but also be at times just blowing the whistle and stopping them and getting them to sort of see what shape they're in and where perhaps you want them to be, and be really explicit in those situations. So I think that's something that, you know, should be front of mind as a junior coach. And I know it hasn't always been, even when I've taken, you know, my son's teams.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think one of the things I say too is just that balance between that game sense coaching, because you might only have them for 2 hours a week, coaching a bit of game sense, decision making, and then fundamentals, and getting that balance right. Because I see a lot of down in my junior club, you see just, you know, the easy one, volunteer coach rocks up and they just run out of drill ideas or drills, and they just get him, you know, playing, you know, 50 footy or a small sort of game, or a bit of match him, and so, or running laps or whatever. It's just, you know, that sort of balance between, you know, teaching the game sense and also that sort of fundamentals.
That's right. There's a place for
everything. Like, it's, I don't think people should be saying, don't do any fundamentals, and, you know, and obviously you don't want your whole training just to be, you know, fundamentals, no decisions. But yeah, you're right. There is a place for everything. And as you're alluding to with that example, I think the biggest thing is, you know, they're often volunteers, or you're a volunteer at your local club, but, you know, still come prepared, know exactly what you're doing, you know, make sure you can set up as much as you can. Behavior problems from kids at training is primarily due to the organization and structure around how it's gone, you know, if you've and put it, you know, that'd be always the first step I'd look at is how can you create those situations where they are active on the move and learning, but really deliberate.
Yeah, no, that's great. So mate, probably got time for two of my questions and then we'll get onto the four, but best players you've sort of coached, obviously you come across a few in your time, you know, some of the, you know, sort of highlights of some of the players or highlighted players across your journey that have really stood out to you.
Yeah, I've been amazingly fortunate. I think I had the best forward line in 2015 coaching Hawthorn, that it'd be hard not to mention any one of them. But I mean, Sam Mitchell is the best example of developing himself that I've ever seen. And I coached him in the midfield when he was probably like 32. So I sort of, you know, went there as a player who, I think I might have even, as a joke, said to him I had to tag him when he was 18 years of age playing VFL. And now I'm coaching him and he's already gone through and been a premiership coach. So I think for me, it was sitting down with him and saying, what do you want? And I think he always made the coach work, and he always developed himself. So whether that was on the floor designing activities he could do, or the coaches would set the training session, but then he would work out ways in which to almost dominate or break the rules of the training session drills, and just he was always thinking about his footy and how, you know, he could develop. So he's an amazing example, and doesn't surprise me how well he's doing with his coaching. But for some of the really enjoyable ones for me are the guys that have taken 4 years to sort of make their debut. So, you know, Luke Bruce is one that I think he was in his third year. Taylor Duray is fourth year. Those guys, they're probably the stories that I love recalling because of the journey just to get there. And, you know, that's one of the things we always talk about with the academy guys is, however, you've got to embrace your journey and sort of not compare it to others, because we're all on a different one.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's amazing. Great stories. Yeah. And mate, the one last one from me. What advice would you give to you know, sort of any young coaches might be listening tonight or listening to our recording, who sort of want to follow your career path. You spoke before, I think it was Grant, he mentioned, and I've met a lot of coaches now that have come through different pathways just because they haven't played AFL football doesn't mean that, you know, they're not going to be a great career coach. Any advice out there for coaches in that position?
Yeah, I think Matt mentioned I do have my own sort of plan I stick to now, but it's not sort of goal orientated. But I've more been around, I haven't sort of, and this is only for me, Rainsy, but I haven't had sort of the 5-10 year plan. My whole theory has been to do the job I'm doing well, and then that will create other opportunities that I might want to or not want to take. So that's the sort of way I've sort of gone about it, and it's tended to look after itself. I've probably found that sometimes I'll sort of speak to people and they sort of want to get to a certain part position by a certain time as well. And I think that, you know, that's okay, but I think it's also around not losing focus on what your role is at the moment and how you can best do that and enhance your reputation around that specific role. I think understanding that every role you step into is a bit of a different skill set as well. So then being adaptable to what changes you may need to make from being a development coach into an assistant coach, into a head of coaching role, and also finding that balance of, you know, are you trying to continually step up the chain, or are you trying to find something that you enjoy? And that's probably why I've gone back to development, to be honest, because it's the biggest area I enjoy. And I think, you know, my passion for it is still there, and it's, you know, sort of been a reason why I sort of haven't continued to sort of follow up the assistant coach roles, which are still, you know, enormously exciting, but it's, and I think I've got better strengths in this area as well. So probably like the players playing to your strengths a bit as well. And some people sort of say have one thing you can hang your hat on, whether that, people would say whether that's my sort of ability to teach and communicate to the players and the way I've sort of studied that and go about it. I don't know. I think again, you've still got to be pretty, you've got to have a range of skills as well to come into the AFL. So keep developing yourself through your strengths, but also areas you think you need to get better at.
I love that, mate. I reckon you've summed up beautifully there at the start, just when you said that, you know, sort of, I've seen that too in the AFL industry, come across a lot of coaches or people in the AFL industry that they're in a bit of a rush. And it's not always the grass is always greener, or, you know, I want to be that senior coach, or I want to be the head of that football, or head of football, head of department, or whatever it is. And if you do a good job in that current stage or that current environment, the rest will sort of look after itself. And it's similar playing too, isn't it? I suppose you've got to have your goals and objectives, you know, and know sort of objectives, I should say, and know where you're going. But it's important to be in that sort of present moment. Otherwise, you're not doing your job, eh? So that's unreal, mate. That's great advice. I've just got some questions here on the floor, so I'll fire away, mate.
We should be
9:30. I mean, I know we're probably going half an hour over, which is not a bad thing. First one we're done, so... everyone, we'll probably finish up around 9:30, so 9:25 now. Troy says, you mentioned that some core skills you need to make. Could you cover off on them quickly? Can the less talented athlete with a great work ethic still make it, or does the system prevent this now?
I probably didn't mention core skills. I said... I think some that they come in not having as a general rule for all players, to be honest. But I think, it's a great thing about our game. There's such a range of players that sort of come in and, you know, I've probably seen with Ross that he, you know, he loves runners. He wants runners. So the demographic of the list might change slightly, but it's also a wake-up call for players to sort of focus on their aerobic capabilities as well. Whereas, you know, but having said that, we'd probably like a bit more pop through different parts of our midfield and forward line or whatever it is. I definitely don't think it's around all being an athlete though. Some of our players, have huge footy IQs that probably is stronger than their athletic attributes. And you'd only have to come and watch, you know, the 3K time trial to sort of see the differences between, you know, where guys finish, but not necessarily corresponding to the top 22 players in the St Kilda seniors. So, yeah, I think going back to harnessing your strengths, working on those weapons, but still not shying away from the areas that you need to. So Isaac Smith, every week he would still want some bag work, ground ball work. He didn't shy away from it. Was it his strength? No, it wasn't. There's probably guys in local country footy that were as good as him in that area, to be honest. But his strength to be able to run and carry the ball and his touch on his feet and finishing was, you know, 9 out of 10, 8.5, 9 out of 10, you know. So, yeah, I don't think – don't ignore those things you have to get right, but also, you know, keep making sure that you do work on your strengths. And some of them are athletic components and some of them are, you know, mental competitiveness components.
Yeah. No, I think to follow up to that question, Troy, I think everyone's, when you talk about the word talent, I think when you get to the AFL, I think sort of like, is work ethic part of talent? I think it sort of is sort of in a sense, I know that's a bit of a subjective.
Yeah.
But like it's, I think it's a bit of a all-encompassing sort of thing with a skill set that an athlete sort of brings, having that work ethic and obviously the talent. So that's a good point.
No, I agree.
Have you got any methods or techniques to coach team defence? Probably could do a whole presentation on this, but I have a group of players that hunt the footy and then rely on the back six defenders to win one-on-one contest to win the footy back. That's from Alec.
I'm trying to think of a quick way. Oh, I think you got to, you know, a lot of the AFL clubs now number off pretty quickly. So are you willing to trust, you need to train this, are you willing to just trust one at the ball carrier, one at the, you know, the exits, or do you want to be a numbers in the screen? There's pros and cons of either. If you sit there and say, you know, you just want one at the ball carrier and one to number off, then there's probably times when they'll challenge the tackler and get through, and then, you know, other failures happen. But there's also probably the example you're talking about where everyone hunts the footy. I suppose it's the decisions around, you know, is the ball in dispute or is it actually, it sounds like your players are thinking the ball's there still to be won rather than maybe defend. So, yeah, look, there's the issue. Have you, I don't know what level you're coaching, have you even tried to show them visually this? You know, have you used the walk it out on the ground to show them? Have you stopped training at times where this does happen? You know, keep challenging yourself that you're educating them and remember, once you present something once, it doesn't mean every player's picked that up. It's continually educating if that's your big ticket item. It's going to take a while and probably never get it right, really, even at AFL level, that one. But, yeah, I think you'll find some benefits there if you sort of keep using those methods of educating your players.
Yeah, there's a couple of good little jewels on there for the IQ. I think here, Alec, where we've got a couple of just basic sort of things that Damien touched on before about sort of, you know, one going to that ball carrier and then obviously, you know, sort of numbering off or just picking, you know, sort of that right. You know, I always use the philosophy with players is, you know, what are you doing when you don't have the ball? So can you impact that contest or are you better off needed? You know, if you're in that example there, are you better off pushing down to the back line and giving a sort of a hand and help out in defence. So really good. I think that's about it. We're right on 9:30. Again, went a bit over, but some incredible, you know, sort of intel there and some knowledge that our guests have imparted tonight, and obviously some great questions. And thank you to everyone being a part of this tonight. Thanks, DC, for getting involved, mate, last minute. And I'm sure we'll hopefully hear a bit more from you, mate. And over the journey and hopefully from time to time throughout the, I know it's a busy period for you, but you know, off season, things like when you can't get involved, we can get you involved.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks. And well done to the guys jumping on, obviously towards the end of footy season, but you're keen to improve your coaching. So yeah, credit to you guys for running it and also the guys who joined the call.
Thanks, mate. Harry, we all good?
Yep, perfect timing. You just want to run through that one, Ray?
Yeah, so guys, just if you haven't left already, but again, this is on the live, it should be recorded this. So just, we've got a 10% discount code there. We might get that emailed out to the attendees tomorrow, Harry, from our team. Just a 10% off your first mentoring session. So I'm not too sure if people out there are aware of, but obviously with the one-on-one stuff with our players, we do one-on-one with coaches. So you could be a coach student. You simply log on to our one-on-one football website, sign up as a student coach, so like a developing coach, and then, you know, organise a virtual online session with one of these coaches, a more experienced coach. So they're their profiles on there. We'll send some more information out tomorrow, so there's a 10% offer there. And obviously our Footy IQ membership, there's a bit of a discount code there to be sent out to give you access to some of the drills, libraries and programs and insights and stuff we've got there. It's a never-ending, we're always adding to the content we've got there. So appreciate it, guys. Yeah, thanks for attending, and hopefully we can do a few more of these. And if there's any feedback, send it through. Had a great time tonight, and yeah, appreciate everyone coming on board.
Beautiful. Well done, Ramsey. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Thanks, guys. Wait for more to leave.
Beautiful. That works well, mate. On the dot, 9:30.
So what do we got there? Okay. Someone's still on, or they're leaving? Yeah, I think we'll probably go. Oh, that's you and I now. Perfect. Well done, mate. Awesome.
Good.
That's good.
Mate, that was gold. I'll.